does he do? He might go all the way. He gives it away. It's a chance. It'll be a goal. He can. Come at the moment. Come at the champion.
This is a Swanscast Extra, the number one Sydney Swans fans weekend preview podcast. In this week's episode, we preview the Swans' round 15 match against the Gold Coast Suns on Saturday afternoon at the SCG. We discuss last year's debacle, the match ahead, matchups, key points, and give our predictions. This is Justin, your host, and with me tonight is regular guest Josh. So, I don't know how much you caught of the last match, Josh, but are you expecting a bit of a repeat, or are you hoping the Swans can actually return to winning ways against the Suns?
I'm glad you used the word debacle. I think that's a nice, soft kind of way to put it. Look, if we turn in another performance like that, we might as well pack our bag and head home for the year, I think.
Yep.
It's certainly something we do not need again.
Now, that match actually set us back so far that it basically ended our chances of finishing in the top four. We had a chance in the last round. We had to beat Hawthorn in the last round to make top four. If we'd won that Suns game, and that was in the middle of a pretty bad run of form, we'd lost 4 from 5. If we'd won that game, we could have made the top four without having to beat Hawthorn in the last match. So, you know, the ifs and buts and coulds and woulds. But, yeah, look, that match last year was not pretty, and I don't have fond memories of it, Josh.
No, I didn't actually watch the whole game. I think I was on a night shift the afternoon that game was on, and I think I managed to watch through to half time on the replay. But knowing what the outcome was, I couldn't go any further. So, I haven't seen the second half, and it doesn't sound like it's anything. I've missed anything.
yeah, pretty much don't. There, you are literally missing nothing from not having watched that second half. In fact, don't even watch it after quarter time.
The first missing quarter, 2 goals, apparently. 11 goals to 2 was all we did after quarter time.
We kicked those 2 goals in the last quarter.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, to put it into perspective, we had actually played very, very well in the first quarter. We looked like we were going to put about 100 points on them. And then, yeah, honestly, I don't know. Complacency? That's really about the only thing I can think of. They just were complacent and just dropped their heads and went, no, we got this already.
Well, it's one of the few times I can ever remember John Longmire in a post-match interview saying that the evidence would suggest that it was entirely mental and that they were just lazy. I can't remember the exact words he used afterwards. But the evidence would suggest that that we put the cue in the rack and paid a price for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. And look, we kicked the first 5 goals of the game. And I think it was like 5-2 to about 3 behinds, 2 or 3 behinds at that point. So we're, you know, a good 30 points up. And it's hard to think what actually happened, honestly. Yeah, we were in New York, me and Mrs. Bloggs, we were in New York at the time, and we got up, I think, about 4:30, 4 a.m. to watch the match, and we promptly went back to bed. I certainly went back to bed at halftime. I knew what the result was going to be. Could see it. So, look...
There's a particular look about our team when they're playing really badly, isn't there? And you just
there
know...
There is, yeah.
You know a half a football away that you're probably not going to get the chocolates from the bits I watched, it was written all over their faces. And then there's that sort of last-minute splurge halfway through the fourth quarter where they try and get it back on track. A bit like the game against Melbourne, actually, earlier this year. There's a half a quarter splurge of energy where they try and get it back on track, but they almost never do. So it's certainly not anything I would want to see again.
Well, look, they brought it back pretty close in the last quarter, and they were within a goal, really, you know, halfway through the last quarter. And then the Suns, they kicked what, 2-3 goals in a row. I'm just having a quick look. They kicked 2 goals in about 2 minutes. Yeah, they kicked the last 3 goals. They really had the last sort of 5 out of the last 7 or 5 out of the last 8 scores in that match. So, you know, this one's did okay to bring it back, but they never should have been in that position to begin with. So, Yeah, let's hope we don't see any of the same. No repeats, I would say, this time around. Thank you very much.
No. And I think, too, that if I remember, I had a look at the stats earlier this afternoon, that have we got, like, 8 goals, 16?
Yeah, 8, 16.
So even just some accuracy in front of goal still could have salvaged a win from something that had been a pretty large disaster. But it's kind of symptomatic of what happened in the weeks and months that followed, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. And at that point, I mean, we'd lost to Geelong, we'd lost to Richmond, we'd only beaten North Melbourne by 6 points in an absolutely thrilling victory with a Lear kick in the winning goal.
That was a good game, that, though.
It was. It's probably one of our better games of the season. We lost to the Suns, and then we just got absolutely thumped by Essendon in the last quarter. And that sort of spurred on our sort of comeback at the end of the season, where we won 3 of the next 4 after that Essendon game. But, sure. Look, that Suns game, that was arguably the upset win of the year. Not just for the Suns, but for any team. It was one of the upset wins of the decade.
Well, it statistically was, and if you listen, if anyone who listens to Footyology with Rowan Connolly and Mark Fine, they actually brought some numbers up on this, and apparently it was the third biggest upset for the century.
Yeah. I'm not surprised at all, because they were such rank outsiders going into the match. They stood absolutely no chance whatsoever. They're playing away from home. They'd lost the first 8 games to the Swans. They literally stood no chance. And, we gave them the match. It was unexplainable, really.
Mm. So but despite our best efforts, we are still capable of losing anything.
Yes. But look, we'll move on to the here and now. And the here and now is that Jordan Dawson has signed for 2 more years. Woohoo!
Yes.
So this is going to take him through to the end of 2021. His contract was up at the end of this year, and he was one of at least a dozen players out of contract at the end of the year. Congratulations, Jordan. Thank you so much for sticking with the club.
He's a gun, isn't he?
He is.
It's good to nail down some of these fellas, and I'm interested to see who is next to put pen to paper for us.
And he has been freakishly consistent for us the entire season. I'm just having a quick look at some of the stats that the AFL website has. Unfortunately, they don't make it particularly easy, but he has been a very, very consistent player for us. So, yeah, I'm really happy with how his career has progressed.
It's amazing how much consistency some of these guys can develop when they're not injured and when they get consecutive games in seniors. And I'll just leave that at that.
Yeah, look, he's averaging 18 disposals this season already. He's 6 contested possessions, 4 intercept possessions. He's kicked 8 goals. He's also averaging almost 6 marks per game. And look, he has just been a really consistent player for us and a really important player for us. And another one that fits that bill is also James Rose, who gets his 3rd game in a row for us, which is the most he's had in years. So, you know, congratulations to the fringe players who are starting to establish themselves.
Yep, and hopefully with Rosie, that because he was better again last week, and I'd hate to see that we play him for most of the rest of the season, and that he has some incremental improvements each week. And then I think we'll know by the end of the year whether he stays or goes. But he was pretty good last week, and I hope he's better again this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to give you a heads up, guys, it is a short one because we are recording late in the week and the game is tomorrow, so we're not going to hold you down for very much longer. Will Hayward, he plays his 5th year senior game on the weekend. Congratulations to him. And we're going to go straight into the team changes, Josh. So, we've got some interesting changes, I would say.
I don't think they're that... Well... I think one of the ins, I think, will be a little bit controversial, but certainly two of them are absolute no-brainers.
One of the outs is a bit questionable too, but I'll go through the ins and you can go through the outs. So ins, Ben Ronk, he's playing his first game since God knows when, I think round 1 or 2. James Rowbottom comes in for his 3rd or 4th chance already this year. So he's on the fringe, he's on the cusp, but he's never really been able to cement his spot. And young centre half forward Tom McCartan comes back in, and he's going to slot straight back into the forward line.
Indeed, he will. The outs are Lance Franklin, obviously with an injured hamstring. They're saying 3 to 4 weeks. I'd say 5 to 6 are season ending, considering the way it's gone the rest of the year. Daniel Menzel has gone out. I think Menzel's probably just lacking a little bit of fitness at the moment and a bit of touch on the ball, which shouldn't surprise anyone considering how long he's been out for. I would say they were going to try and manage his minutes for the last 3 senior games he played, but they couldn't do it because of injuries during the game. So I'm not surprised at all to see that. But Ryan Clark going out is a little bit contentious with some people.
Yeah.
What's your view on that? Why do you think they've taken Clarkie out?
He had a pretty poor game last week. And, you know, there's been some discussions that maybe he's a specific use player and there isn't really a use for him in a Suns match, which to me speaks that there isn't a lot of trust in what he can do and what he can bring to the team. So maybe he's in that fringe 5 or 6 who could be brought in and out on a needs basis.
Yeah, I think that kind of sums him up. I don't think he was as bad as people think he is. I think he looks worse than he actually was because of some of the games he turned in earlier in the season. Certainly stats-wise, he didn't have a shocking game, and we certainly had many who were worse than him. But I agree that he's probably a niche tagger, and when you bring him in is when you need a hard lockdown role, but you want to keep Hewitt free. I think that's probably going to be his role. And if that's his role, he's going to be, like, he's pretty good at it too. We don't have too many people who can towel up side bottom. So, look, I'm pretty comfortable with the move. And when James Robot is turning in 30 touches and 3 goals a game in the NEAFL, he needs to come back in.
Yeah, he deserves a shot. I wouldn't really liken it to Robbie Fox, who goes back to the NEAFL and absolutely kills it. Comes into the senior team and, you know, looks like Mr. Potato Head from Toy Story. So, and I'm not talking about the one who's got a fair level of ingenuity in Toy Story 3, how he puts his bits and pieces on an actual potato chip and flops around the sandpit. I'm talking about more like the first episode of Toy Story when he's looking like a rank old potato. You know, fair play to Robbie Fox. He tries, but you know, you can't really maintain a senior position when you're averaging about 4 disposals per game.
No, and I think Robottom's ethic and endeavour and his disposal efficiency and that stuff, I think he's already matching Robbie Fox in most areas when he gets a senior game. So
yeah,
I'm pretty comfortable with it. Ben Ronk is an in for me. I find that the most interesting one. He hasn't exactly been ripping it up in the twos.
Yeah, look, he got his first game.
Small pressure forward.
Yeah. I remember when he got his first game, he had a consecutive run of games where he looked good, but not, you know, amazing. He had some flashes, and it was a bit like when Sam Murray went to Collingwood right at the end of that season, which we're going back to 2016, 2017. He had a couple, about 3 or 4 games in a row where he looked absolutely amazing, and we talked about it on the blog, saying we got to re-sign him, but he went to Collingwood for a second-round pick, and it was a good deal at the time. Colin was probably regretting it now they're suspended. But Ben Ronk came in only a couple months later, and he had 2-3 games in a row which were pretty decent, 2-3 goal games, and then he got his chance, and a couple of games later he kicked 7 against Hawthorn. So
yeah, that's right.
He's an impact forward. He's not going to dominate games, so you know, maybe he's been
he's not, but he was shocking early this year when he's in seniors, and I think we said then he looked like he was unfit. So
very much so.
Maybe they've just given him something to work on and said, well, you go back and you work on this stuff, work on your forward pressure, and when you get that right again, you can come back in. So whatever metrics they set him, he obviously met it because he's getting another go.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other problem was that when he was down on the fitness, he was down on confidence, and he's a confidence player. And you could see it in the way he played. He just had no confidence in his own ability or what he was actually doing on the field. So it was telling.
Someone who gut runs so hard, he'd give up real easy.
Yeah, but I think also the fact that he was being played almost as a midfielder. He spent, it seemed like 10% of the time in the forward 50. So it was odd. I think the whole team then was just not functioning. It was a non-functional team at the time. Everything was a bit odd. I wouldn't say he's like a downhill skier, but he's more like the cherry on top. He's not going to win you a game through grunt and hard work. That's not him. He's a finisher. So you need finishers in your team. You know, your Luke Bruce from Hawthorn, he's not going to go into the midfield and win it. But he sure as hell can win it in a forward line if he gets his opportunities.
No, that's right. But we were relying on Ben Ronkula this year to be that midfielder.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Extra midfielder that we desperately needed. And it just wasn't working. But
yeah.
And I think from the few NEFL games I watched, we tried that in the NEFL as well. And they've put him forward again.
Ordinary as a midfielder.
He is not
a midfielder. He doesn't have the tank for it. I wonder if they're just trying to build up his fitness. But he just doesn't have the tank to play midfield. It's never going to happen.
No. He's a young bloke. He's got a long way to go, and we re-signed him for another 2 years early this year or late last year, one of the two. We're going to see more of him, so see how he goes.
It's a bit like a Lee's situation when he was on the fringe for so long, and then he comes back in. But look, we've talked enough about the ins and outs. We've talked about him for nearly 10 minutes. Just to give a quick recap, because usually when we do a preview of the match, we do a little bit of a history and the last time they played. We're going to go over it real fast because it's not really much to talk about. It was the first game that they've beaten us in, and it was one of the worst games I've ever watched. 12-16, 8-16. You've already talked about the first quarter. After that, it was the only good quarter. After that, it was three quarters of just horrendous turnover football. We couldn't even get it past the center circle. That's how bad it was. We get the ball in defense easy enough, clean enough, get it to midfield, like halfway down the wing, and then I don't know what happened. Just complete and utter brain fade. We just butcher it. Just literally handball it to the Gold Coast player and just to go straight back over their heads. Inexplicable.
Yeah, no, that's right. And we had a good laugh early today when we looked at the stats that said that showed that every player in the Suns team had an intercept possession, and we had seven players who didn't have an intercept possession. And that sort of shows you just how much we turned the ball over.
Well, here's an example, right? Franklin had 15 disposals and seven clangers.
Yeah, yes.
And that wasn't like the outlier. Like, everyone else was beneath him, but it was like it wasn't like one of these logarithmic ones or like a quadratic. It was a linear fall off. Everyone was like tick, 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 tick below. So, yeah, it was very, very unclean. Papley, though, three goals. And, yeah, we've already covered the rest. Some of the stats, we're just going to go over them real fast. We had 35 more disposals, 7 more tackles, 13 less inside 50s at a home game, which is disappointing. The rest of the stats matched up, except for the fact that the Suns beat us in the defensive one percenters. And they had us in hitouts. I know they had us in hitouts, I just can't remember what the stat was, so probably don't care either.
As well, this was the only senior game that Darcy Cameron played, and Darcy Cameron got pretty
spanked.
You know, toweled up fairly badly by Jared Witts as well, so but despite that, we matched them around the ground in pretty much everything, but we just turned it over so goddamn much. And they laid so many more inside 50 tackles than we did. It was like 17 to 11 or something like that.
Yeah.
And my recollection from at least the second quarter is that we were really sloppy in tackling as well. We gave away like 5 for high contact alone in the second quarter.
Well, Zach Jones kept on getting caught with the ball, and if he wasn't getting caught with the ball, he was just slaughtering it. It was one of the worst games I've seen him play, period. Hitouts.
Yeah.
Darcy Cameron.
Sort of goes back to my theory, though, that
I know
that when the team plays badly, Zach Jones tries to take it on alone, and I'm happy for him to try and do that to keep it going.
Yep.
But it certainly wasn't his finest one, but he wasn't getting a lot of help from his mates either.
No, he had a lot of partners in crime in that one. But I know he touched on Darcy Cameron. In his only senior game, he played 47%, had 9 hitouts, 3 disposals, 2 tackles, and of his 3, 1 was a clanger.
Yeah.
Jared Witts, Jared Witts didn't even get any Brownlow vote at all, but he had 56 hitouts, 14 disposals, and 2 behinds to go with 9 tackles. 9 tackles as a ruckman with 56 hitouts is ridiculous. That's better than what Grundy and Gorn give you in any given match. That is unbelievable. So,
and he didn't poll a vote. That's pretty sad.
Didn't poll a vote. No. But I mean, at the same time, like some of the guys who did poll a vote, like Jared Lyons, he was really, really good. I'm also looking at Lockie Weller, who absolutely killed it. I mean, we gave him the ball on a string. And Aaron Young. So, yeah. And those three were easily their most effective players throughout the match, even when they were getting nailed in the first quarter.
Yep, absolutely. Stephen May comes in for an honourable mention there as well. He was pretty solid for them down back as well. Had either 15 or 17 intercept possessions and just really toweled up Franklin, I think, after halftime. From what I'm told, I didn't watch it, but I got some of the scuttlebutt off one of the blokes at work. He was very, very animated the next day. Very animated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I completely understand that. I pretty much, you know, chucked a bit of a tanny while I was overseas. I was in America. I can't even remember where in America I was. I think it was New York. I can't be certain, but I was not happy wherever we were. If we just do a quick head-to-head between the teams this season, the Swans are up in almost every category. We averaged 22 more disposals. We averaged one more inside 50. Our disposal efficiency is better. Our inside 50 efficiency is better. They've got 20 plus more hits per game. They're averaging 3 more clearances than us. 6 more contested possessions. We're averaging 1 more turnover, which is good. I like that. We're averaging more than them on something at least. The best 22 and predicted 22 were a fair way ahead on them according to the AFL player rankings. Marks, everything, I mean, except they're beating us intercepts, more tackles. Yeah, this is a game that really looks like a team who's probably around 10th on the ladder versus a team who's probably around about 17th on the ladder. So, but fortunately, it's 14th versus 17th. So, yeah, that's really where it's at.
Yeah, and as we know last year that rankings don't mean shit if you don't show up and actually play a game.
No, they don't. And even last year when we played them, they were in an unbelievable run of form. And when I say unbelievable, I mean unbelievably bad. Nothing has changed again this year, stunningly. Their run of form, I think they've like won one from the last 10 matches. That's how bad they
are. Yeah, I think they've been more competitive, though. Through the season, like they've had a few games where they only went really down by less than a goal. Yeah. They could easily be on 6 wins, and they're not. But I don't think, you know, if last year we thought we were going to go in there and just flog them, well, I think they're probably a more competitive team this year. So, you wouldn't want to fall into the same trap, would we?
No. Let's go. We'll go through Suns really quickly. They lost by a point in round one. They won by 3 points in round two. They won by 5 points in round three. They won by 2 points in round four. They got spanked by Adelaide. They got spanked by Brisbane. They got beaten by Eagles by 23 points. They lost to Demons by 1 point in round eight. Then they got beaten by Port Adelaide by 28. Then they got beaten by Geelong by 27. Then they got absolutely crushed.
Yeah, they held Geelong to under a goal until partway through the third, though.
They did, yeah, they did. It was really competitive. Yeah. Giants crushed them. North easily got rid of them in the second half. But the really heartbreaking one was their last match 2 weeks ago when
against
they
St. Kilda.
Beaten by St. Kilda. It's a heartbreaker.
That was a heartbreaker for me. I genuinely felt sorry for them at the end of that game. I thought they deserved the win out of that.
They did.
I thought they're missing. They're sort of missing three seniorish kind of guys. Like they're missing a key defender, and they're missing a contested ball, and they're missing another tall forward.
Well,
they've certainly got the ruckman for it.
Well, I mean, Gary Ablett went to Geelong. Sam May went to Melbourne. Tom Lynch went to Richmond. So you're not wrong. They are playing like they are missing those players. And if they had those players, I reckon they'd probably be even 5-6 wins.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly could be. They're just missing that extra little bit of class to eke out those wins, which were narrow losses. So I guess my point is that you can't show up and be 10% off because they've probably got just enough depth to make you pay for it.
Well, obviously they did last year. So they have been competitive this year, and we can't take them lightly at all. So that's going to lead us into our matchups. So, Josh, could you give us your matchup, please?
Yeah, look, Sam Reid's obviously going to take... Sam Reid or Tommy McCartan, rather, is going to, at some stage or most of the game, end up being our deepest forward at any given point. Last year, they would have put Stephen May on them. This year, I think, I think they're going to put Jack Homsch onto Sam Reed or Tommy McCartan, whichever one's down there. And if it's not Jack Homsch, it's going to be Day. Jack Homsch physically matches up to Sam Reed very well. He's almost the same height. I think he only gives up 2 centimetres. He gives up 6 or 8 kilos, but athletically he's probably just as good. And so unless Sam Reed's got the sticky mitts out, Jack Homsch has got enough to be able to spoil any high, you know, any contested mark that Reed goes for. So that'll be my first matchup, will be Jackie Homsch on Sam Reed.
Yeah, look, he's an athletic enough player to be able to do that. And it's going to be interesting. I like what you said about Tom McCartan and Sam Reed. It's going to be interesting because you're going to throw Nick Blakey into that mix as well. And they will most likely, the three of them together, will rotate through that forward line and sit a full forward throughout the match because obviously Franklin's not there. And that leads me into my matchup, which is a defender on forward again. And this time I'm going a Lear on Lear on Peter Wright. So
2 metre Peter.
2 metre Peter. Now, Gold Coast don't really have a particularly strong forward line. And, you know, 2 metre Peter, he hasn't been in great form at all this year either. But, you know, it's incumbent for us to make sure we match up to him. And you could also chuck in Holman or King or someone like that. But if we can stop 2 metre Peter, and I reckon Aaliyah is the man to do it, then that's going to go a long way towards us winning.
Yep, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. He's still their tallest player down there.
Yeah,
isn't he?
He is. He is. And he's sure a good forward too. So very good contested mark. And Aaliyah's really the only one who's got the height, speed and reach on him. So,
He hasn't been getting good service though. He hasn't been getting good delivery. Having said that, I tell you, you can't let these guys like Lukosius do what they want, mate. That Luke Jack, can't remember his friggin' name now. Lukosius,
yeah.
He's got some foot skills, so like I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes a factor during the game either. But I like the idea of a Lear on Peter Wright. Yeah,
and Anthony Miles has been a bit of a revelation for him as well. So it's interesting. They do have players who are decent users of the football. Swallow, Weller, Miles, they're all, I wouldn't say A-graders, but they're all pretty much the best that the Suns have as far as midfielders go. And they're on the cusp, so they can use the ball and they can use it quite well. Which leads me into my key point, Josh, which is we're going to have to win the clearances because we're definitely going to lose the hitouts. We got absolutely destroyed last year in the hitouts. We're going to get beaten in the hitouts again. Jared Witts is the number one hitout ruckman in the league. Amazingly, the Suns have 71 more hitouts than the next best team. They got 689 hitouts for the season so far. Collingwood is the next best on 618.
That's an insane number.
It is. But it also correlates.
Despite the fact they're getting a better draw, an easier draw, that is still an insane number.
It is. But when you look at their disposal efficiency, it's absolutely horrendous. They're in the bottom three for the league for a disposal efficiency, but still averaging good numbers for clearances and contested ball. They just can't use it.
Yep. So, no, I absolutely agree.
If we can win the clearances, that's going to go a long way. Your key point, Josh?
I've actually got two. I've just thought of one, and one is that, and this is fairly obvious, one is that you cannot underestimate the impact of Stewie Jew's inside information. That's pretty self-explanatory. And look, the second one's easy as well. It's just turnovers. can't turn it over. Just cannot turn it over. And we've been okay for patches this year, but we still turn it over too much, and they've proven that they can punish us. And if their disposal efficiency is kind of crap, I'll give them this. They are quicker by foot, as in they can run a lot harder than we can in straight line speed wise. So just can't turn it over.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if it's going to be a case of someone chucks up old Stewie Jew a bag of lollies. Hopefully,
that's a good idea.
Something laced with that might knock him out for like 90 minutes.
Milk bottles. We have to get someone in the crowd to just sit there in front of the coach's box and just throw milk bottles at him all game. Just bounce them off the glass. Hey, Stewie, here you go. Take the bait, mate. Take the bait.
Just roll him in some like sleeping pills first. Or some Xanax just to relax him. Predictions for the weekend ahead, Josh?
Mine's pretty easy. Little Tommy Papley. I don't know if I can call him Little Tommy Papley. Papley and Reed will be our two most influential forwards, and they will kick 3 goals each, and Nick Blakey will chime in with another 2.
Ooh, that's a big prediction. I have gone Callum Sinclair will lose the hit-out count by 15, but have double the clearances and plus 1 goal on Jared Witts.
Yep, okay.
Hopefully he can do it, because I don't think he did it last time. Jared Witts gave him an absolute bath last time, so, yeah.
Did Sinkers play much in the ruck last time, though?
I don't know. He had to have, because Darcy Cameron only played like 40% of the match.
Yeah, true.
Yep, so look, thank you everyone for joining us. It's a short episode tonight. Obviously, the match is on tomorrow afternoon. Thank you so much, Josh, for joining me again.
No problems. It's always a pleasure showing up.
As always, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with a tag, The Swans Block, and we also have our second Facebook page, Swanscast Podcast. So make sure you jump on, like us, let us know what we're doing, and leave us a review, especially on iTunes. That's where we definitely want our reviews. We're going to be back on Sunday with the match wrap-up and the look ahead at the rest of the week. So until next time, go Swans.
Go Swannies.